Is that homing? Is it homing?
Okay, we're learning the Sedra Kadoshim, which in these Chumashim, which is the Feldheim Margolin edition of the Chumash, is page 223. It's Vayikra, which is the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 1.
Is that Leviticus?
I always thought it was Leviticus.
Yes, but I mean, is it Levi?
Levi, of course, it comes from the word Levi. It is largely, but not exclusively, at the beginning at least, about the service in the temple, of whom the Levites played a major part. It's interesting that the Kohanim, the priests, it should have been called something to do with the priesthood, because they're the main ones doing the service in the temple. The Levites were doing a secondary role of sorts, because they were the musicians, they opened the doors.
There was security.
There was some Kohanim that was security as well, but basically their job, their role was helping the Kohanim to do their job. But the Kohanim were the main servants in the temple. So it's interesting that the translation.
Levites.
No, the Levites were secondary in importance.
But not in the beginning. Because Moses received all that.
Well, we're talking now about the service in the temple. So Moshe was a Levite himself, but as I've said on a previous occasion, the Kohanim, the priests, were a sub-family within the tribe of the Levim, the Levites. So Aaron was the father of the family of Kohanim that in turn was part of the Levite tribe. So in one sense, the whole thing is the Levites, but in another sense, the Kohanim are a notch above, because they've got a more key role in the
support
service.
Support
services. Go. So, looking at the Sedra, we have the Sedra Kadoshim, and the Sedra begins with a very interesting statement, which is a subject of great discussion amongst the commentaries. Let's read it first, and then we'll discuss it. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lema, the usual introduction to paragraphs in the Torah which are telling us laws. So God spoke to Moses saying, transmit this to the Jewish people, give them the message. And as follows, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael, speak to the whole congregation of the Jewish people. That is noteworthy, because usually it just says Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel. Here it's Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael. The Eidah means a congregation. I actually was brought up in a synagogue, a shul in Manchester, that was called the Adas Yisrael. The very words that we have over here, the congregation of Israel. So this adds import to the statement, because we have a Sedra in which many, many fundamentals of Torah teachings are in this Sedra. There are a few Sedras in the Torah like this, where we have myriad laws coming out of them. Mishpatim we already had in the book of Exodus. Full of laws, mainly civil laws, but full of laws. Again, 50-60 mitzvahs in one Sedra. When you think there's 613, if you divide that by 50, which is the approximate number of Sedras, 53, so how much is that per Sedra?
I'm a media student, I don't do maths.
It is 30.
He's a math teacher.
If it was 100, it would be 6. So it's 12. Oh. 12 mitzvahs per Sedra.
Yeah.
On average. And here's a Sedra with 50-60. Mm. Mishpatim's got 50-60. There are a few of them like this. Kiseitse in Devarim, another one like that. 50-60 mitzvahs in one Sedra. So rich, you know, really rich. Why? Because the Talmud discusses, like, you could just have a short paragraph over here in this Sedra, and you have reams of Talmud discussing these three sentences. So it's really very, very powerful to see how the essence of a whole body of law is represented in the Sedra. So that's why it's Kol Adas, you know, this is a moment to tell everybody. V'amarta aleihem, and say to them, Kadoshim tiyu, you shall be holy. Ki kadosh ani Hashem aleichem, because holy I am the Lord your God. So you could say that, or you could say, For I, the Lord your God, am holy. So God seems to be linking his holiness with our holiness. So the question is now, what is holiness? What does that mean? What does the word mean? We talk about something being holy. Is this cup of coffee holy? Would you call it holy?
Yeah.
It's a good suggestion. The bracha is holy. In a certain sense, you're right. But it starts off being neutral.
Yes.
This is one of the analyses that's made according to Hasidic teachings. That the world is divided into three categories. There's the category of holiness, that is mitzvahs and good deeds and sacrifices. That's the domain of holiness. And then on the other hand, you have the domain of evil, impurity. So that's at the other end of the spectrum. Right? So at the other end of the spectrum, you have the opposite of holiness. So holiness is goodness, the observance of God's will. Evil, tumah, impurity is the opposite of God's will. And then you have a whole world of neutrality in between. So apples and oranges and dates and cups of coffee, they're neutral. They're not holy. And they're not holy. They're not treif. They're not impure. They're not disallowed in any way. And they're not mitzvahs. It's not a mitzvah to have a cup of coffee. So now this area of neutrality, which in Hasidic teaching is called klipas noga, which means it's klipa, which means it's not God's will, but noga. There's a light in there which can be tapped. You can use it for good or ill. So as you rightly say, if you have a cup of coffee and your intention of the cup of coffee is not for your own personal enjoyment solely, or for some people on the higher madriga, not at all for their enjoyment, but solely because it helps us keep healthy and strong so that we're able to serve God properly.
Yeah.
And I make a bracha before I drink the coffee. And I make a bracha after I drink the coffee. Then the coffee acquires a certain holiness because it's being used in the service of God. It enabled me to make a bracha. It enabled me to make a bracha after I drank it. It enabled me to think of God in the other way that I said before, that I'm drinking this because it's going to keep me healthy, and that's part of the service of God, because if I wasn't healthy, as Maimonides says, I'm not able to serve God. Ill people can't serve God properly. So it's a mitzvah to be healthy. So it's a mitzvah to have a drink of coffee. Well, not coffee, tea, drink, water, you know, whatever. As long as it's not a dangerous drink. So now we have some idea of holiness. That is the classic meaning of the word holy. But what does the Torah mean when it says you shall be holy? What's it trying to tell us? Well, it could be along the lines of what we've just been saying. That we are neutral, we're not good, and we're not bad. We have potential. We have potential to be good and potential to be bad. But as we're born with an animal soul, and we're born with a godly soul, and we're born with a body. The body is not a bad thing. And it's not necessarily a good thing, it's a neutral thing. It's like an apple, it can be used for good or used for ill. So we can indeed acquire holiness. We can push ourselves to the side of holiness. We can, hopefully, we're raised in a way that we appreciate these things, given a good Jewish education, and we understand what's right and wrong, and what's good and bad, and what's, you know, what's taivara, as it is in Hebrew, and we can use our bodies for good. That's one way, that's the classic way of analyzing holiness. But Rashi has a different view. And he says, specifically in this context, the meaning of holiness is purushim, that you should be separate. Separate from immorality. Keep a high moral stance. Be moral people. Especially in relation to sexual morality. No adultery and no misbehavior in that area. That's what Rashi says. Hevi Purushim. You should be separated. The word Parush means to be separated. Separated from Aroyus, which means immorality. So Rashi is giving the word holiness over here a very, very specific meaning. Although before we discussed it in this way, we have this very general approach, which the general analysis, which is what holiness is. So now we have two meanings so far. There is yet a third meaning, and that is the opinion of Nachmanides, who is called colloquially the Ramban, standing for Rav Moshe ben Nachman, hence Nachmanides. Ides is Greek for the son of. Maimonides, the son of Maimon. Nachmanides, the son of Nachman. He writes a commentary on the Chumash, and he says there's another meaning over here. And this is a very, very powerful analysis which he has. He basically says like this: the Torah is full of laws. Do this, don't do that. Do this, don't do that. So, myriad laws that we have to keep as Jews. But there's a whole area of permitted behavior. There has to be, because we've got to live. So we're permitted to eat. Kosher food, of course. But we're permitted to eat. We're permitted to sleep. We're permitted to drink alcohol. We're not like the Muslims. Jews drink alcohol. We have wine. We say l'chaim. We're allowed to drink alcohol.
We're allowed to get married.
We're allowed to get married and all that entails. And there are no restrictions there except for family purity. When there is a period of the month at which relations do not take place. But at other times there's no actual explicit statement that says you must restrict yourself. So basically Nachmanides says, how much should I eat? Where's the Torah telling us how much I should eat? I could gorge myself and become 20 stone. Become the fattest man in England. I could drink and be lying in the gutter every night, drunk as a lord. Where does the Torah say I shouldn't do that? The interesting thing is that Maimonides is of the opinion that the Torah does say you shouldn't do that. Because later on in the Torah, we have the story, or the law of the wayward son. It's called the Ben Sayre Umarit. That means the rebellious son, the wayward son, he becomes really wild, and he starts demanding things from his parents, demanding money with menaces, and it's in order to indulge himself with drink and with meat. And he's a real no good Nick, and he's only a young boy. He's only 12. So as soon as he's bar mitzvah, this law doesn't apply. So the Torah tells us a very interesting thing. This is unique. The Torah says that if a boy expresses himself in this kind of behavior, he should be killed. He should be executed. Why? Because at the moment he's a minor, but he's showing that by his behavior he's going to be a ruffian, he's going to be a rogue, he's going to be a murderer, he's going to be a robber. And the Torah says, Yom Zakav al Yom Eschayv, let him die in merit, meaning before his bar mitzvah, so he won't have any sins. And let him not die guilty. That's it. Anyway, there's a whole discussion in the Talmud about it, as to whether it's possible to have such a thing. And there's an opinion that says there's no such... It cannot happen. Because they say it cannot happen.
Isn't that point? I know it's going off the point now if we talk about this, but don't they say that the Yetzer Tov only comes in after the bar mitzvah?
That's why the Torah is saying his behavior is not the Yetzer Hara specific. Sorry. His behavior is the Yetzer Hara without the Yetzer Tov being able to oppose it. But he's out of control. And the Torah knows that with this behavior he's going to end up being a murderer. He's going to die anyway as a result of his behavior. It's better he should die now innocent than die later guilty. That's the term. Anyway, the Talmud basically concludes that this is something that cannot happen. Various reasons. I won't go into it now because it's a digression. I'm just mentioning it because Maimonides learns out from that section where it says that the parents describe their child, this boy, as being Zoleil Vesove. Zoleil means a guzzler, eating meat with, wild guzzling behavior, stuffing meat down his throat. And Sove, which means a drunkard. He's already shickering, lying in the gutter. So Maimonides concludes, if the Torah is telling us that the parents of this boy are complaining that he's eating like a meshuggah and drinking like a meshuggah, that shows it's forbidden to do that. So Maimonides concludes that you're not allowed to have excessive behavior in those areas. However, Nachmanides disagrees, and he says it's not actually a law, and he coins a phrase. And the phrase that he coins is, one can be novel bershus ha-Torah. You can be an abomination with the permission of the Torah. The Torah has permitted a person to be a drunkard. The Torah has permitted a person to be a guzzler who is eating all day long and never away from his wife. I mean, just totally unbridled behavior. He's a horrible person. So here, says Nachmanides, is the warning not to behave like that. Kedoshimti. He says this means don't go overboard with all the areas that are permitted. The areas which are forbidden are forbidden. Of course we know you can't do that. You can't eat trefa food, and we're not allowed to steal, and we're not allowed to murder, and not allowed to commit. All those things, of course, are forbidden. But what about the things that are permitted? You might have thought you can indulge them to your heart's content and just go berserk, as we see people do nowadays, and other ages as well. So he says, this is where the Torah is telling us moderation. Just keep it the middle way. Just keep it even, subdue it, not overmuch, eat, but not too much. Drink, but not too much. Say l'chaim. Wish somebody well, but don't get shikr every day.
Happy medium.
Exactly. The happy medium.
The happy medium.
So this is his explanation, a very, very powerful explanation, because he's saying that if not for the Torah over here telling us this, we would go away with the conclusion that we're allowed to do all of this. Because nowhere else does the Torah give us any of these restrictions. So basically, the Torah is telling us over here, be a good boy and be a good girl and behave in a moderate way that means that we're holy. That's holiness. Holiness, in according to the Nachmanides, is moderation in all things. Don't go overboard. Don't overindulge, even if it is permitted. And this leads on to a rabbinic saying, Kadesh Atzmacha B'Mutalach. The rabbis say, sanctify yourself. It's brought from here, from Nachmanides. Sanctify yourself with what is permitted to you. With what's forbidden to us, that's forbidden anyway. We're not sanctifying ourselves with that. We know we can't do it. But sanctify ourselves with what is permitted to us.
What's that mutalach?
That's a totally different mutalach. That is to do with Hataras Nadarim, which means the releasing of vows. When someone has made a vow that they regret, and we also do this on Erev Rosh Hashanah, that we annul our vows just in case we've made promises to ourselves or to others, maybe, or mainly to ourselves, and we're going to behave in a certain way or do a certain thing or refrain from a certain thing. And you know, somebody, you know, swears that they're going to give up smoking and then they start smoking again. They have transgressed a vow in a way. So we, in on Erev Rosh Hashanah, when we're being judged, we don't want vows to be hanging over us. It's enough that we've got the laws of the Torah hanging over us that we've transgressed, but we create our own laws by making vows. So the rabbis gave us an opportunity, or the Torah gives us an opportunity of releasing those vows, and we do that on Erev Rosh Hashanah, although you can do it any other time, and women can do it too. And that's called Hataras Nadarim, and in the Nusach, in the version, the formula that is said to release the vows, it says over there, you know, mutalach, 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 but if you release
different,
it's the same word. No, it's the same word. The same word, muta, means permitted. This thing is permitted. Like this person said, they're not going to eat bread because they're getting too fat. And they say it in a way of, I don't want to say I, because it'll be me and I'm saying it, even though I'm just giving an example. But they say, they will not eat bread the rest of the year, in a fit of anger at themselves because they've gained 2 stone. And then 3 weeks later, they forget about it and buy a sandwich. So they transgressed their own law. They made up, and the Torah takes these laws very seriously. If a person makes a vow, it is a binding law on oneself. It becomes a law, just like chazah, the same as eating chazah. That's how serious it is.
All right.
So if a person realizes later they didn't really mean, they didn't see the ramifications of what they were doing, what they were saying, they didn't really understand how far it would go, then they can go to a rabbi and ask for release. And that's what HaTos and Domino. So the word mutar over there, it's the same word. But here we're saying Kaddish Atzmecha b'mutalach, sanctify yourself with what is permitted to you. Right. So this is a tremendously powerful lesson, which the Nachmanides is giving us. It's a lesson for life. It's a whole way of life. Right. The Jewish way of life. The Jewish way of life is moderation. We're not the ones to go for all the, you know, the boozing and the schmoozing and all these things that people have indulged in, and it gets them into trouble.
Yeah.
The media now are full, over the last few years, are full of talk about all the bad things that flow from boozing.
Mm.
And what's boozing? Overindulgence in drink. You have a l'chaim with your friends, it gets yourself in a bit of a better mood, but not to make yourself shikra and be lying in the street.
Exactly.
And misbehaving and so on, and fighting your friends in the pub, outside the pub, or violence, which comes from it. I mean, they reckon that a large proportion of crime is committed under the influence of drink.
Yes.
Okay, so ladies, we have been beaten by the clock here, so we'll wind it up for this evening. Apologies for the shorter time this evening, but that will gradually recede.
Mr. Potter, you said something about Marion?